Okay, we're back on record now, 2:31 p.m. and Detective Fogg is still testifying. Detective, earlier, I believe yesterday, you presented one of the body camera footage of Sergeant Brandon Hogan.
Yes, ma'am.
Sergeant Hogan was leading the SWAT team that actually entered the apartment and cleared.
That's correct, yes.
And was he subsequently interviewed by the Public Integrity Unit?
Yes, ma'am.
And you reviewed that interview?
Yes.
The transcript of it?
Yes.
Was Sergeant Hogan specifically asked a question by the interviewer regarding the shooting through the glass door with the blinds and curtains and whether or not that would be something proper?
Yes, he was asked that question, yes.
Okay, would you read the question asked of Sergeant Hogan and then his response?
Yes. This was part of the interview with Sergeant Hogan that was taken on March the 20th. Question, and not really specific to this situation, but as a SWAT operator, given certain circumstances, if you're in a position where you cannot see into a building or a room because of curtains, blinds, things like that, how, as a SWAT operator, would you address that situation? And I know it's kind of open-ended. Would, if you can't see in there as a SWAT operator, would you shoot into a window to where you can't see or a door? Sergeant Hogan's response. No, you all know, you're accountable for every round. If you do not have good target ID, identification, an ID that they are a threat, you cannot shoot. That's basic academy stuff. In regards to shooting through a window and stuff like that, we even on like patrol or whatever position you may be in, you still cannot fire into an unknown. You don't know what's behind it. You don't know if there's kids, there's whatever, people that aren't even, that aren't supposed to be there that are friends. You have to have good target identification and to make sure that they are a threat before you can actually put rounds on that person.
Okay, that's all. Now, you discussed and we listened to the interview yesterday with Detective Cosgrove that was conducted back in March. And did you yourself conduct an interview with Detective Cosgrove?
Yes, ma'am.
And when was that?
That was September the 18th.
And was that interview recorded?
Yes, ma'am.
Would you play that interview at this time?
Yes.
I thought we listened to that one yesterday already.
No, we didn't listen to the second one.
Okay. The one yesterday was the one conducted in March.
He said it was what day?
September the 18th.
Did we listen to another one that you conducted? Did I never listen to this one?
Tony James. That was with Detective Tony James.
Right.
Sorry. Go ahead.
That was on September the 11th, Tony James.
Okay. Sorry.
18th. I'm sorry. First interview with Cosgrove was March 25th. The interview I conducted with Cosgrove was September the 18th. You're welcome.
Before you start the interview, Detective Fogg, when you listen to your own recording of the interview, and there's maybe a 30-minute period in there that you determine was about things that were not really relevant to the actual events of the shooting?
Yes, ma'am.
So when it reaches that point, are you going to summarize?
Yes, ma'am. At the 40-minute and 30-second mark, I'm going to summarize from that point to the 1 hour and 10-minute mark. I'm just going to summarize what was said. That's some things that occur after the main focus of this investigation.
Okay, go ahead.
Along with the Attorney General's office, it is September the 18th at 15:25 hours. We're at 1024 Capital Center Drive in Franklin, Kentucky. Speaking with Miles Cosgrove, also present as his attorney, Jared Beck, and Assistant Attorney General Barbara Worthy. Detective Cosgrove, please show your first and last name.
Miles Cosgrove, Miles, M-Y-L-E-S, Cosgrove, C-O-S, G-R-O-V-E.
And how long have you been with Little Metro at this point?
Approximately 15 years.
Okay, on March 13th of 2020, what interview were you assigned to?
I'm assigned to the Criminal Intervention Unit or Narcotics, the Narcotics Unit.
How long have you been in that position?
4 years, maybe.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to go over the events that occurred on the morning of March the 13th, 2020. If you would please start at the location of who was there at the meeting point right before you hit Springfield Drive.
What do you mean?
You own that somewhere, right? You staged up at the Springfield Drive.
Okay, so it had just finished raining, and I was probably, I may have been the last person pulled in the parking lot. We were behind a liquor store or a church parking lot. I'm not, but kind of both right there. So it's either the church parking lot or a liquor store about, you know, 3 to 4 minutes. From the location we're going to go.
Who was the next there?
Mike Campbell, Tony James, John Madley. Mike Campbell was already at the address. He had the eye. I'm sorry, I'm kind of nervous. I'm trying to
make this a normal conversation.
All right, we found out that I'm thinking of this like a test. So it's myself, Lieutenant Hoover, John Magley, Mike Nobles, and Tony James.
Was Lieutenant Hoover there?
And Lieutenant Hoover was there, yes.
So you get there, did you all sit out like, this is what everybody's goals would be in actual execution of the warrant, or was it just going to kind of go as you did?
No, we haven't. We always have been formal.
So what was your role? Yeah. What was your role going to be when you made excuse the warrant?
My role was, there's no formal word for it. My sign would be the exterior of the building. Due to those gentlemen already having assignments, so my assignment was the side of the house. That was my assignment, the exterior of the house.
Okay. So have you executed warrants with this group of people before?
Yes and no. I've worked with all of these guys for the past 3 years, and I've also worked with them in other aspects. So have I served warrants with all of them? I would say probably yes, but.
Tell me for the phrase. Have you served a executed a warrant with this entire group as one unit where everybody has the same job?
No, absolutely not.
So what time did you arrive? Did you all convey over and follow each other over there? Or did you all drive kind of just get there when you can?
Oh, no, absolutely not. When we go to the target location, we are, you know, we follow each other to the target house as best we can.
Okay, so what time did you all arrive at the Springfield Drive?
I don't know. I mean, I know now. All I know is it's about midnight. I'm not really paying attention to the clock because it's a simultaneous warrant. So I'm really just paying attention to when I'm told to go do the check, if that makes sense.
Who took the move from your stage point? Who says listen?
I'm not sure if there was a formal order. I know John.
Who's on the radio for what's going on in LA? Somebody's listening.
John Cooper had a radio.
Well, someone, either Sergeant Manley or Lieutenant Hoover, they say.
Correct, yes. Listen, yep. And Lieutenant Hoover actually rode with me because you're trying to consolidate so you have less cars, so much spot. So Hoover is passenger in my vehicle up to the house.
Okay, so when you get on scene, where do you park your vehicle in relation to the target park?
Okay, so if you're looking at the that building, I am. There's a dumpster or recycling box or some kind of big trash can thing, which would have been to the right, which was, I don't know what distance, but it was a fast walk from that spot to the house.
Okay.
So where you wouldn't be tired or winded, you know, just a reasonable, safe spot.
Okay, I understand all the theory part of it, but I'm trying to get details about something.
I'm when you pull up to the house, you always want to try to be inconspicuous. And you want to be able to move your car around. I make sure Hoover can get out. I don't want to be boxed in. So I park right next to a trash can, which is, it's a parking space. Everybody's marked cars number.
Yeah,
yes. And once you pull up to your spot, there's no assigned parking for any spot. You just kind of get into a spot.
So does everybody, everybody gets there, parks the car, everybody just goes to the door, or they get together, they all walk up to the doors? That's the group.
We don't necessarily get together, but everybody gets out of your car, and your situational awareness, so you're watching people. And then as you walk up to the house, you're still watching people, making sure you got bodies, or making sure everybody is supposed to be there.
Okay, you're approaching the apartment. Do you see any lights on in the apartment?
No, absolutely not.
Any TVs?
No.
Any lights? Any signs of activity before you approach?
No, it was just darkness.
So who? Do you remember, I'm not familiar with how the sack do you remember how the sack was as far as personnel when they approached the door?
No, not exactly.
I'm the best camp.
I can't tell you the sack. I can tell you from once they start knocking on the door, I can tell you who those two people are. John knocking on the door and Mike Nobles. The other folks in the set, I can't tell you what.
So is Melvin Lexus?
My assignment, sorry.
Max O'Malley was knocking on the door. Was he saying police, search warrant? Did he make any verbal commands, verbal statements?
So I am not in the set. I am in the.
Did you need to use this climber to get a picture?
Now, I haven't seen these pictures since that night. I've seen the news stuff. And seeing that makes me super uncomfortable because I don't want to make a mistake here. And I only saw that house for that evening. So I will tell you and do the best that I can. But you understand, I haven't seen these pictures.
And it was just an offer of an aid to help with your
problem. I've been calling this kind of like the vestibule, which is the bottom of the stairs.
I call it breezeway.
I am at this breezeway because my initial assignment was to watch this door.
Before the door was breached, where were you? This way?
No, I'm still up here, right. I'm at that corner.
Right.
I'm right there. So I can see kind of what those guys are doing, but my main focus is still this door, because I want to be able to see if a light comes on or if someone peeks through the blinds. I want to be able to see that and communicate what I can see to my people that can't see what I can see.
Makes sense.
Yes.
Okay. So how long is the staff outside the door approximately? No time to sleep anymore. But approximately how long are they outside the door knocking, detecting double sergeant commanding?
He's talking as wide as possible.
I know it's contact.
I just worded uncomfortable on 90 seconds. I feel that we are out there knocking on this door way too long due to the other factors that happened while we were knocking.
Is there anything else that is kind of unusual or distracting?
So, during this knocking, and when I say knocking, it's this is not where after making a ton of noise, not yet. John, and I know now this is John knocking on the door. Someone knocks on the door like a pizza guy, like a normal person would knock on the door.
No, not please, not
no, absolutely not. No, not to vibrate the house, you know. And then a gentleman from the apartment directly above, the apartment right to the right of the stairwells, to the right of that.
Yes, ma'am?
Yes, correct. Yes, that was that. A person, a man, comes out of that apartment, not out of the apartment, but opens the door and is standing more or less at the door.
Are you seeing him or are you listening to him?
I'm listening to him.
Are you still there?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, at the end of the stairs. Yes, correct. Are people talking to this guy? Yes. The only person I could talk to this guy at first, because Brent is loud and this is a confined space, so it amplifies your voice.
I bet where is he at this point?
But this here, so wait, we come down.
Where is he at? You're he's talking to this guy here. We're really saying this is the next
thing. I would say towards that gray, whatever that gray thing is behind that container.
Mm-hmm. Here?
Right here in
where?
In that, yes, within
a something. Thank you, sir. That's what I'm saying. I just pointed there.
So, logically, and I'm speculating that
that's what I'm saying. I'm not
some feedback.
So there's this conversation. There's this like hostile yelling back and forth between the guy upstairs and him. And there are words said, and I don't know what these words are. And I believe I've never said what the words are. It's like leave the girl alone, or there was no girl there, or something like that. And I remember hearing the word girl. And now I'm like, hey, we're out of the apartment. We've been told there's a girl that lives here. So that's. Okay, that's good for us. So there's a girl that lives in this apartment. Now I hate to speculate because I'm reading stuff in the news. So that's all I do. I just hear Brent and this guy having this verbal confrontation back and forth each other. And then I hear the police knocking. That makes sense. We are knocking on the door, yelling police. Not we. Those guys at that time.
No cameras here.
We have John has done the gentle knock on the door. Brett has had this rhetoric between the upstairs guys. Now there is forceful pounding on the door. Then there is forceful pounding on the door with the police, the verbal command, police search warrant. What we always say. And it's loud. I know it's loud because I'm a man that's loud.
Okay, this is going on. You're still standing there looking at the patio door. You see it at this point, you see any movement? You see any lights coming on? You see
no, any... absolutely not. And that's still my sign. That's still my sign. So there is a command. It was command given to hit the door. I don't know who gave the command. I just hear it. So now, me. Things step up a little bit. Things always step up a little bit when you do these types of movements. So, obviously when the ram hits the door, your attention, no matter how hard you train for this, you're going to look at the noise, if that makes sense to you. That we hit the door. I'm looking at a door that has nothing. You know, your interest kind of goes from one thing to another. Nobles hits the door. that's when I realized that Nobles does not have what I call a cover two or a cover person, meaning that Nobles is getting a door by himself, and Nobles has a 20-plus-pound stick of concrete in his hand, and is extraneous, you know, he is physically exerting himself hitting this door. And that's when I say to myself, I'm subconsciously, you know, because I've had training and I've done this a lot, that he needs somebody to protect him because he is working right now, and that is his job to work. So if somebody opens the door or whatever, Nobles just has this tool in his hand and can't do anything to help himself. So when I see that there's a mistake here, I, from this breezeway area, go to where Nobles is at. The door is now open. I don't see much of this opening.
So do you get there and the door is opening, or do you get there split second before the door is open?
So I got there after the door had already, well, obviously after the gentleman would have gone in first, so if I got there before the door would open, we'd just be running this stuff.
I'm not saying that. You just want to be... My thoughts on that is you're going to give cover Nobles security, give him security. You get there before Nobles makes the last slam on the door. You get there, he makes the door opens, Nobles retreats. Or is he still saying?
I don't know what Nobles did. Nobles hits the door. If I was in that cover two spot, the position I'm in now is not the correct position, because now I'm, you know, two steps behind where I should have been if that was my assignment. So I'm slightly behind the eight ball. Meaning that when someone, the number one person, if they go in that door, they expect me or the person in that assignment to be right behind them. So due to that little gap right there, and I'm saying little, and this is a little, I perceive this to be a minuscule gap, like two-step gap. So the door is open and I don't really see much due to my ankle. I see John go in, I see the door open, I see John go in, and then I'm...
That's on that side.
Okay.
So the door opens.
Well, the door doesn't open.
It doesn't open, the door is open.
Yes.
Okay, please don't split hands. The door is open, or whatever it means. Madeline's on, looking at the door, he's on the left.
Yes, he is, but I don't know that.
You don't see Madeline when you're approaching Nobles, you don't see him at all? You don't know that Madeline's right there?
The way the stick works, I'm
still saying.
So to answer your question, I'm sorry, I'm good.
Yeah, you worked 5 minutes since.
So to answer your question, I knew John had not done it. I knew that Nobles was hitting the door. I don't know if they had changed assignments. I don't know.
You're just saying I don't know.
I mean, Madden could knock on the door, and then some other dude I didn't know could be the number one guy. I don't know. That's... And to me, it doesn't matter. I need to do an assignment that I see. I need to fix an assignment that I see is wrong, and that's what I did. So I don't know who goes in. I mean, I do know who goes in, but you know, I don't know if you're
I think what he's trying to say, he's parsing it a little bit harder than he needs to. I think what he's saying is at that moment, he wasn't absolutely certain that was
going to happen. Decision he made.
Right.
I'm just trying to get, and he's trying to be stressed, but he's very confident. I don't like to put him under any stunning stress.
Right.
Just the deal with the details of this.
Of course.
It all happens 10, 12, 15 seconds, whatever happened. Mm-hmm. And I know.
And this is the important part.
And it's that right. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to put any under stress on you. I apologize if that's the case.
Okay, so the door is open. John goes into the door. I am what I call a step or two behind him. As soon as I am at the vestibule, of the door, the entryway of the door. I'm at the threshold of the door. I am immediately overwhelmed with bright flashes and darkness and what I describe as a movie reel that's doing that ticking where you see white and black and white and black. I know John is now not where he's supposed to be. There's nobody in front of me. John is now on the ground, or John is below me. And there are still these flashes happening. These vivid white and black flashes. Go ahead, you have something.
No, please, wait.
So,
I know it's tough, I know it's stressful. Maybe it is easier if you ask him, kind of like...
That's a lot, man. Yeah. I was reading from him, he was having trouble getting to confess certain things. My questions were to kind of nudge him on to the next
thing. Give him the next thing.
Take a minute. There's no rush. If I had enough to bottle of water, I'd give him.
So there are these vivid white lights followed by this darkness. And the room, and I don't see a room, I just see this hall, this tunnel. And it's almost instantaneous that I realize that John is kind of at my feet and he's moving around. And I feel at one point that I either step over him or he crops through my legs, something like that. I know there's somebody below me. And I know that I have out of fire because I just sense that I'm fired. And I know I earlier told folks that, it's like a surreal thing. Like, if you told me I didn't do something at that time, I believe you. If you told me I did do something, I probably believe you too. So I know John, my friend that I've known for 15 years, has been shot in this confined space, and I know this person is down, and I sense that there's still these gunshots happening due to those bright lights that are I can't even explain what it is. Knocking on the door, fingers to come.
So you never called this part right here?
No. No, if anything of my body is compromised, it would be my hands from being extended to curtains. But
so would you think, I'm just asking, do you think when you were stepped up or on or over your Sergeant Manley, was he here? Was he here? In the
I don't know. I don't.
Okay.
I mean, I want to say I know, but logically it makes sense to me. But I do not know if he went to the left, if he went to the right, if he went behind me, if he did something completely different. I do not know.
Well, you're not looking down at
him. No, actually,
yeah. Right. I assume you're still, man, remember, but I assume your eyes are fixed on something. I would assume.
Correct, yes.
Correct. You're not going to be far. I should ask this earlier, but I've got to stop trying. When you were here, if you kind of see Knowles needs assistance or security, do you have your weapon drawn or your handgun weapon or some drawn on, or do you remember? When you were before,
I mean, I don't remember, but
when you won that, when you
I don't remember, but logically, it would not be an officer.
Some people do different. You're not the entry person, so you might not have your weapon drawn. So
I don't remember, but normally it would be out.
So. The lights come on, you're having your, you see the lights. What after you think you fired, can you speak at all to how many rounds you think you fired?
So, let me back up just one second.
Yes.
I think it's important for me to tell you what that. So during this flashing light, I am seeing this human shadow figure. I don't think I've said that, so I just want to say that. So, as the round count,
but I was looking up there. Wait a minute. Is this shadowy figure down the hall, close up to the door, large, small,
place? The shadow figure. It's just a human, larger than normal human shadowy figure.
He's larger, taller, wider.
It's wider than it's a.
So I know it's
you know, it's a. Anyway. So I see a tall person, tall human shape, followed by like a rounder shape connected to it.
Like side by side, like this?
Correct, yes.
Okay,
that's hard for me to even kind of, you know, but that's what I saw between those.
Let me ask you more about the flashing lights. Where were the lights come? Were they lights in the hallway? Were they up close to your eyes? Were they coming from the side of inside the apartment? Were they just around you? What context were you seeing the lights?
Those lights, to me, were encompassing. They are in front of me. It's like it's like you're looking at the sun, and you open your eyes and look at the sun. It's just this big
response,
flashes of big light. I'm not seeing the stars, if that's what you're asking. I'm not seeing the air and stuff like that. I'm seeing big flashes of light. And it sounds, I don't know if it sounds unbelievable, but that's what I'm saying.
How about you? Tell us what happened, your perspective. And that's just what it is. I mean, you here, there's nobody here. There's four people here, only one person was there.
Exactly.
I've been doing this a long time, but I've never been in a situation like this, so I can't relate. Everybody that was there that evening, every officer called, experienced it differently. There's no right or wrong way to do it. Now, I'm sure people told you that. You don't need to hear that from me. But that being said, I'm just trying to get some information from the best we can. Back up on the human shape or form or whatever how you describe it. Did that shape or that you saw, did they make any actions that you could call? Hands up, hands moving, squats?
That was within.
No,
I am not seeing that kind of detail. see you. I'm trying to let you, I'm trying to understand, so you know. Yes, yes, because it wouldn't. And again, I say yes, but I'm not 100% on that. I mean, I try and make some logic out of this and try and put it together, but I would think so, yes, that I believe John is already down when I'm seeing these flashes. Now, I don't know if it's up and down or down and down. So it's convoluted for me too, and I was there and I don't understand some of the stuff.
So you think you fired? You look and speak to how many you fired?
Correct. I've had some time to analyze it, you know, after the fact. And there's other things we can talk about later on in time. But I am fairly certain. I know that I fired a low amount of rounds. That's how I feel due to something later on that occurs.
I found any type of stories the best type of sequential.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, from start to finish. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm trying to.
So, and then, and it's
So, if you kind of, you step over John, around John, then the next thing you remember is what?
So, I have fired, or there is gunfire, and if you told me I didn't fire, I'd certainly believe you right now. So, the gunfire is over between, I sense that John is no longer around, that there's this emptiness, that John is scooted away or something. I see it, but I'm not entirely sure that I actually see John scooting away. But I feel that there's this emptiness, there's this time to go, that John has been moved to safety. And I'm only at this door for 4 seconds? I mean, it's a very short amount of time. It could be 6, it could be 5, it could be 2. I'm in this doorway for a very short amount of time. And then I leave the doorway.
What, as you leave, are your senses start to come, are you starting to come out of the lights, the...
So, I leave the door, so the doorway, the best of the breezeway, and I see a sea of people hobbling and tugging and chirping.
You think your good senses come back?
Yes, they're coming back, but go
ahead. As you're going toward leaving that flat door park, you see the people. Are you hearing any shots on the scene?
So, during this event, I have this, I don't even know the word to say. There's this utter muteness happening. Like it's like I'm in a cave of complete, utter silence. So I don't hear anything. When I'm in the breezeway going to the parking lot, I still see these flashes in front. And not in front of me, because I can see people in front of me. And I would not run towards flashing light. That would be asinine, you would think, right?
Are we talking about like back toward the apartment? You're seeing the flashes?
No, these flashes are coming from, and I hate to use direction during this stuff.
Sure.
But there is what I'm fairly certain to be flashes of light from the parking lot that are gunfire in the parking lot. Okay. And I hate to say that because it doesn't make sense to me.
But that's true.
You don't have to make sense.
Yeah.
Not hate to say it, it's just, what happened.
Right.
And you know, you're an investigator, you know how things are, but the whole story, as it were, is a bunch of different stories.
Yes,
it's like a puzzle piece. And your puzzle piece is this dude. The whole puzzle is we concentrate on this part, like puzzle you can describe. You're heading toward the people, you kind of get your sense about you.
Yeah.
At that time, do you hear or see which maybe gunshots? Were they
like to their left? There are bright flashes of light to my left, because it's not directly in front of me, and this is not, and it is definitely not to my right, because I don't remember anything to my right. So the only directions I'm sensing is straight ahead and to my left.
So if that.
No, I have no sound until where we're about to go here in the next paragraph. So I'm in the breezeway going towards the parking lot. I'm seeing these flashes to my left. I'm seeing. I hate to embarrass them, but I'm seeing my candles big dumbass on the ground.
Just tell us what you remember as best you can. Don't worry about embarrassing anybody.
But I think my camel has been shot too, because she's on the ground.
So where did you go, best you can remember, in the parking lot?
After you see Campbell, what do you do? Those other guys kind of bulldozed over Campbell. And I went to the right of them because they're in. I don't want to go to the NFL team, you know, to get to safety. So I go to the right of this pile of men, thinking that Campbell has been shot, and thinking, oh shit, there's a lot of problems now. This camel's a big dude. So we're talking about.
So you're coming to the right.
I'm in the right side of the parking lot, and we didn't talk about this earlier. There's a white car in the parking lot, a white SUV or a minivan or some white freaking car. So I'm in front of this vehicle, but I'm not in front of the vehicle. I'm behind the vehicles that are parked in the parking lot, but in front of this white vehicle thing. That makes sense. John is closer to the white vehicle than I am, because he went to the left or straight, and I went to the right. So I'm behind cover, and I'm behind cover, and I go to reload, and that's what I wanted to touch on, or that's what I was going to touch on earlier. So I go to reload, and I have this overwhelming sense of that you shouldn't have reloaded right now, because I don't know if I had because, but you know, I'm like, I shouldn't have reloaded because that magazine was probably full, and I've just dropped the full magazine on the ground, and I've loaded it with the magazine in the fire.
Okay, where are you within? If you haven't moved out, it's back there by the breezeway.
I'm in cover between the white car and the park cars.
Okay, let me ask you the detail there. When you went to reload, and I found when you go to the details, it kind of helps you come in. Where did you get your magazine from? Where did you get that? Your spare magazine?
In my front pouch.
On your desk?
Yes.
Was your slide locked back, or was it?
I don't remember. No, I can't. It was not, because the magazine was in and out. There was no working the slide or anything like that. It was so fast, and that's why I think I messed up. Because I should have an administrative reload. That's what I felt like I should have. That means I should have put that spec magazine, the one that had stuff taken out, back into my box. But I'm under stress. I'm losing. I'm stressed, obviously. And I made a small mistake, and I'm not even going to call it a mistake. I should report that. I made a small mistake, but then I reloaded the gun, right or wrong, I did.
Did you, when you got the magazine, did you load it?
something about the slot. I think he's like, oh, yeah, I'm not here.
So after you reload, you gotta tell him now your senses are starting to come back. Still panic.
Yes, they are, yes, no, they are coming back, because I'm also seeing, I've seen Mike Campbell.
If I see Mike, you have to say you reloaded.
Mm-hmm.
Then what happened?
Then what'd you do?
Then I gotta find work. You gotta find work. You can't stay in one spot. I go to John, and I'm sure John's.
Okay, now that I'm not going to summarize the next 30 minutes or so. They're working on, Cosgrove says they're working on Sergeant Manley giving first aid. He suggests to them to move Sergeant Manley behind that white car he's talking about. Once Cosgrove makes it to the white car, he does not hear any gunshots or see any flashes. At this point, he's talking, his senses are starting to come back to him. He takes his tourniquet out of his vest, his ballistic vest, and he throws it, Manley's on the ground, he throws it on top of it, on top of him. Cosgrove is standing at the back of that white vehicle still, watching the right side of the building, right here. At some point, Cosgrove leaves that area and goes and gets his car from this area here, where he originally parked it, and takes it back to where Manley is. He takes his AR-15, his rifle that has it on duty, out of the trunk of his vehicle. He goes to the glove box and takes some first aid supplies and he gives those at the car to Manley. For them to use to the first aid. Lieutenant Hoover is having trouble applying the tourniquet on the Manley. At this point, Tony James is helping Hoover tend to Manley. Cosgrove, at this time, still says he is helping. He's still covering the building, watching the building. Cosgrove says at some point about this time he hears someone on the radio very loud. He can't make out what they're saying, but they're very loud. Shortly after he hears ruckus, what we think that the gate get ran, patrolman shows up in the Twiz area. They put Manley on top of Cosgrove's trunk, and then they start to withdraw him from the area. Someone is driving the car, and they're going to have to go past the window to apartment 4, go back that way. When they first start out, Cosgrove is trying to keep up with the vehicle, kind of for security reasons, but within a couple of steps, the car starts going too fast. He can't keep up. So at this point, Cosgrove is back near the area of the white vehicle that he keeps talking about. He's watching the building again. He says at this point he has low, poor line of sight. He can't see all of this, but he's at the corner of one of the vehicles, the back of the vehicles. At this point, he still believes there's only one patrolman on scene. Detective Campbell states he hears someone in the building, not necessarily inside the apartment 4, but someone in the building. At this point, Detective Hankinson begins attempting to call the person out. Cosgrove had asked Campbell to, but Campbell apparently was winded. He couldn't get his breath back in. Sometime later, he can't get his time. He sees someone in the breeze room. At this point, he starts understanding there are more officers around him. As the person coming in the breezeway, a K-9 officer begins talking to him and trying to call him out. Cosgrove is still, he's not really watching what's going on with the subject at this point. He's still watching the building. after the subject comes out, let's turn up to Mr. Walker, after he's taken away, Cosgrove at some point talks to Detective Cole Gibson on the scene for a few minutes. And Cosgrove states, after he leaves the scene about 30 minutes after that. Then he leaves to go, he was taken to the LMPD's Internal Affairs Office, which is PIU. And that's where we're back at, getting ready to start back. And this, we're starting back at about the 110 mark, minimum.
Okay, let's depart from that night. Let's go back to, and look, we don't know what happened in the criminal action. We're trying to place the fall or anything. We're trying to figure out. Because how many times a year does Louisville LPD go to the fire range?
Twice. Fall and spring, I think.
Okay, do you do...
Maybe it's three times fall and spring.
Do you have any night fire that long ago?
Yes.
You probably do four. The two pistol.
Well, you do that, it's all one.
Okay, you gotta do all one. Because we always did our smoking separate.
Well, you do go separate. It's like another 10 minutes.
Well, I don't mean separate. Yeah, I'm just talking about separate. Yeah. So, you look at the main question. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you could, just, you might have to go back to when you were younger to the academy. But how are we all trained on not so much use of force, but like when to discharge a weapon? Like,
well, I can't give you a definition because that's, I would discharge my weapon when my life was in imminent danger or when somebody else's life is in imminent danger. Those are pretty much the only times that I'm going to.
Yeah, I didn't mean that, but I maybe didn't phrase myself articulate correctly. So, years ago, I went to the academy in 1993. I went to Richmond. Back then, Louisville was still in Richmond, but you came on. Back then, we were taught if we wanted to discharge a firearm, we shoot to reassess. And then go to the high low rate. You came on about here, or you came on the police department?
2005.
2005. So when you went through firearms training at the Louisville Police Academy, back in 2005, how are you all taught? Are you all taught that make sure that you know you've got a mask? Please correct me if I'm wrong. Are you all taught once you feel that you are justified in using deadly force? Use of the firearm is. Are you all taught to make sure you have a target, not use it? If you think shots are coming from there, from anywhere, are you all taught to make sure you have a target? And are you taught to shoot the threat stopped? Are you all trained to shoot a certain amount of rounds and reassess? I don't know, man. If you can articulate that.
Especially
in the well, how do you interpret your training? I should listen to this.
To, if you interpret a threat, you perceive that there is a threat.
I'm not getting to whether you were justified or not. That's not what I'm asking.
Right.
I'm not going there. You did what you thought you needed to do. I'm not going there. And this is an area that I know it might be hard for you to split. I'm just saying. And in general, okay, let me go back to my training. I was taught two shots, reassess, and then if you need to shoot more, shoot more. Back a few years later, mid-90s, that training was changed.
I would agree. I will agree to you shoot a...
Are you taught at some point that you're responsible? And not you, but when an officer discharges a firearm, they are responsible for every round that they...
Yes.
Were you taught to, I'm going to break this down again like I did earlier. Were you trained to shoot till the threat is stopped?
Yes.
Reassess?
Correct. Well.
Or were you taught fire two, reassessed, and fire additional rounds at me? Well, you came out in my class.
We're taught to, I don't know about the number thing. That may be an informal thing.
That was a formal thing originally, that's what it was. It changed as he came on.
I think that's what it's saying.
Yeah, is that.
Okay. I'm not going to put a number out.
If you weren't, that's not.
We are taught to neutralize the threat appropriately.
Exactly. And, but then after you stop firing,
mm-hmm.
are you trained to discharge, you shoot to the, you think the threat is stopped?
Seriously.
Are you taught to go to the low ready or high ready, reassess the situation, scan for any further threats?
Yes.
And then engage them if needed?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Because it gives your brain a mental second to.
And that's what I want to make sure. Work. I'm not talking about what happened at night, I'm just talking about how you train.
Yes.
That's you. All LPS.
Yes. I would agree with right. that, yes.
And please, if something I just said that's not correct, please correct me. For 2020, as of March 13th, have you been to the range at all this year? Do you remember?
Is that a threat? Yes, it is. But is it a different threat? Yes. So yes, there are ways, there, I'm not even asking a question, but yes, yes, they teach you to perceive threats during the training, or in the police department.
You think you'll ever shoot or don't shoot scenario for me?
Correct, yes.
Okay, this is a major question, and you may not be able to, and you may not feel comfortable, either or in the world. And I know from what you said earlier, I know what the answer probably would be. Were you aware that, not meant for a conversation, this is something I'll do later, but on that night, were you aware of any actions taken by Detective Hankinson after Sergeant Mallory was shot? Up to the point that he was bringing Mr. Walker out of the apartment. Were you aware of any of Detective Hankinson's actions in the tower?
Well, yes, because he called up to the
Between the time that Sergeant Mallory was shot and the time that Hankinson was calling Mr. Walker out of the subject out of the apartment, were you aware of Detective Hankinson's any of his actions between that time period?
No, the only person I remember is John. The patrolman, Tony James with the gloves, and Hoover putting the tourniquet on, helping me put him on the trunk.
And Mike. On over with Sam, Mike Campbell, two times.
Right. Yeah, so.
Well, three times, because he pulled up your AR-15 long gun, and he was winning, so three times.
So, I did not see, I didn't talk about that, so no, I didn't see Brent that entire time.
So you were at the time, you were not aware that Detective Hankinson had discharged his weapon, fired his weapon?
Oh, correct, yes, no, I thought John and Robert were the only ones, plus whoever else had shot.
But at the time you didn't know who the other person was?
Correct. That's interesting. Now that you say that, so later on, it would have been that time in the parking lot, I believe, because maybe that's not true either, because my camera was standing there. I'm thinking maybe they separated us, but how would Cole know that?
Well, that's like,
So no, I didn't know Brent had fired until much later.
But you knew that John was there?
Yes. I knew that there was gunplay in that doorway, in that apartment. And it would make sense, because I'm not shooting, and there was gunfire happening in the apartment. So, I logically can deduce that there's gunshots happening from the apartment.
You perceived some of those gunshots at least coming from John.
Correct. Oh, yes.
Yeah, correct. Yes.
Okay.
I think that's what she was
saying. Okay, yeah. Correct.
This is relevant. It's not really relevant. Actually, it's really relevant. This is back all the way up. When do you think the lights or the tunnel vision or whatever you want to call it, when do you think that started? Was it after the shots fired? When you started approaching? I know it's approaching is relatively.
And I keep saying, as soon as I turn into the doorway, that is immediately what I see is blinding, flashing lights. Immediate. It's not that I'm standing at the doorway and I can see the anything else.
And I do realize this is the 4 or 5 second event. So.
Well, I'm glad you do, because I can't.
Well, this part is the most
blaming.
Because I'm.
So.
Is there anything else from that 10 or 15 seconds of the incident? The door being rammed, the shooting, shots fired, you withdrawn. Is there anything else that you may, after as we've been talking, that you can remember that might be relevant that we have, as has been brought up?
This is not relevant. So as it's not relevant to you. It's relevant to me because it irritates me. Tony James walks up to the vestibule, or to the breezeway. Tony James is in the breezeway with that tactical ballistic shield, which I've never heard of. We've not discussed a ballistic shield. A ballistic shield is a complex piece of, it's simple. Personally, I think it is simple. It is a very complex tool to use. It's not a tool that one person can use. And that irritated me that Tony James had a tool while we walked up there. But
did it irritate you that he had, or does it irritate the fact that he went up front?
It irritated me that I didn't know that we were taking a shield up there.
But apparently you weren't the only one that was surprised when that happened. Not getting any specifics what other people say that about. You're not the first person that said that.
Which makes a lot of sense to me.
Because as you know, it's complicated.
Well, most shows I've seen, I was on Frank for 20 years. This is a horizontal type shield. You hold it like this. Mm-hmm. Ours are tall, and they're women carries. Mm-hmm. They're longer than this one. This was a, they hold this one, carry this way, so that was unusual when I saw that.
I've never seen that until then. I'm not sure I have seen it, but I've never seen it.
Yeah,
we don't use them.
Not a cracker, none of them. Nobody uses them except for SWAT.
I was going to say, it's interesting, so when you were telling me about that, I was imagining the one you were talking to.
Yeah, but it's not.
That's right.
What do you
say is
this? You
want to
take? How many shots did you think you fired?
It's not until much later that I could come up with a number. That evening,
At that evening,
I didn't know. Mm-hmm. It's not until like I was kind of able to decompress it and whatnot, and maybe by seeing some of the things I've seen on the news, it's influenced my thought process. So I think that I fired a very low round count of 4 or less, and that is why I think I felt that urge that I made a mistake in fucking life.
Is that like the first moment you thought to yourself, okay, maybe I've only shot so many times, you know, I still had a lot of rounds here, I didn't need to reload. Like, is that the kind of first time you really thought about it?
I don't even think the thought, because when you shoot a firearm, there are many things that happen. It's physical, it's mental, it's visual, and I'm sure it's something in my body saying, I shouldn't have done that.
Just the reloading.
Yeah. Just the reloading, yes. And there are other things that I could beat myself up over, but they're just me.
I know how tough all this is. But in the end, I mean, you're not really sure how much shots. I mean, you're just.
No, I wouldn't say.
Which is nothing easy.
I wouldn't think so, yeah.
But that night, I had no idea. week. So that makes sense. I'm seeing boom, right. Yeah. It's not, I'm not seeing the flash down here, flash over here, and a little flash over here. I'm seeing the sun followed by darkness, followed by the sun, followed by darkness.
But in front.
Just encompassing, yeah. And then, like I said there, I think you used the word television, and that's what I'm seeing this confined space with the flesh, you know.
Respect me, anything? When we're talking about the, when you're shooting, you're pretty sure, of course, it's all happening really, really quick, right? I mean, you know, you're trying to remember as best you can, but we're talking, what, at most, like, 5 seconds? I mean, really, that you're in the doorway?
Yes, very sure, yes.
Okay. And you're aware that John's shooting. Returning fire, he says. Right?
Yes, I know there are gunshots from the person in front of me.
You know someone has fired? Right, and John's in front of him.
Yes.
And he's going down.
I don't know if I know that, but I knew that a second later. I know that someone is down, you know, from my sensories.
And that's when you fired, right?
Correct.
And you're doing that because you're trying to protect him and protect yourself, right?
Yes, very much so, yes.
And you're aiming at where you perceive that threat to be coming from, right?
Yes, correct. Yes,
okay, this is our interview with Miles Cosgrove. It is 16:57.
After hearing that interview, are there any questions for Detective Fogg?
Yes, ma'am.
It was established that there was no perimeter, no interior lighting in that vestibule area, right? It was dark. It had no light.
That's what he said, yes.
Was there lighting in the general area of the apartment, such as the parking lot or lighting on the ends of the sidewalk?
We didn't address that in the interview, but...
Oh, yeah, there's one right there.
Right there.
Well, there you go.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Hey, this original interview, he said that he was right behind an angle, just pretty much instantly. In this one, he says that he was further back, 2 steps, then he was at the door. Once he got into the door, Madeline is already following back. He doesn't know it's Madeline because somebody's following back, he's below his feet. Then all of a sudden, he sees 4 flashes. Pow, 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 pow. He doesn't say 4, but he sees flashes. He sees what he thinks is a shadow at the far end of something, and then he opens fire. He said that he entered his clip the first time. This time, he says he is blinded. He only shoots what he thinks is a few times. Then he gets out of there because he feels randomly is no longer in his feet. He retreats out of there and gets out the breezeway. But now you can see from the left side of his eye somebody firing into the window, which is Brett, I believe.
He sees lights.
He sees lights.
Right. But the whole, I'm glad you said it. The whole time is what I'm hearing him say is that he's blinded. He's blinded as soon as he makes that turn into the doorway and he sees those lights. Either he sees a shadow of a person or he doesn't. But he's
blinded. He sees the shadow.
He mentions the shadow both times, but I think he is, in general, from both interviews, he is consistent about when the television or whatever.
Has he been getting touched in the past?
It's encompassing. That's all he says. It's encompassing. Yeah. The lights are all around.
So I've never experienced that, so I can't speak specifics. All I can tell you is what he said.
Right.
You know, you hear me ask him multiple times, or a sense is coming back. You know, He talks about when he's leaving to go toward the parking lot, he talks about seeing those flashing lights. So doesn't hear anything.
Right.
But he describes those shots when he's leaving as gun shots.
Yeah, at some point he does mention that they are, I think they may be gunshots too. That's correct. I'm sorry.
Does he have a history of panic attacks?
I'm sorry?
Does he have a history of panic attacks?
Oh, I don't know. It's these type of situations, whatever happened that night, everybody responds to it differently. So, yes.
How many interviews have you heard during police where they really can't describe what was going on?
You know, I haven't investigated any other police shootings where an officer is shot, but I've interviewed, I don't say hundreds, but a lot of people who discharge a firearm. And it's not uncommon to them not to be able to give you a complete recollection from the time they drew the gun to the time they stopped firing. Now, sometimes they're just playing or trying to be evasive, sometimes they're being the truth. And it's difficult to tell, but I will say it's not uncommon for people to experience that. It's definitely not uncommon to say, from my past, if someone shot another human being four or five times, even more, that they may think they've just shot once. So that's common. Yes?
I've noticed that you've gotten flashing lights multiple times. I noticed when you showed that her body laying on the floor that her phone was right next to her. Could there be any way that she could use her phone, flashing lights?
I'll look back.
Camera?
Because if it's dark and that door is open, he sees flashes.
That's the only thing. Especially if it's pitch dark.
Well, you know, we can't speak. We can only speculate what happened down the hall. You know, what we do know from people talking, our interviews we've heard too. They open the door. The dark. The lights. The hallway's dark. Always dark. Mr. Walker talks about the TV being on in the bedroom, but he says that's the only light on in the house. So we can't speculate on it.
Is any of that stuff included in your investigation? Because I would assume that someone had to do a clean sweep and an investigation of that scene. So they would have seen whether the TV was on and made that account. They would have gotten her phone to see if any action had been taken on it, his phone, if any act, like, so is that any of that stuff included in any of the things that you all
did?
You can answer.
I can't speak to, because what we are doing, we're presenting information that was accumulated by multiple people. I can't speak specifically, now the scene was processed, we do know that. I don't have that report to say whether the TV was on. If you remember the photo,
but you can't go back to the video because also the dining room is on.
Well, turn off the lights. But we saw in the video, one video, that they turned the lights on for security purposes. Yeah. We didn't see anybody turn the TV on.
Do we have any pictures of the TV in the back if it has been shot or anything? Because I know they said they shot into the second room.
But the video.
Your television is not
You will hear more about the evidence collection, the bullets and all that from another detective who will be tomorrow.
So you all only included what was provided to you?
No, we did independent interviews.
But as far as like people who processed the scene, it's just what they gave you.
As far as the scene processing, yes. We became involved.
The information they gave you from it.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
It was just the information they would have given you from that is all you know.
Yes.
Have these officers been involved in any of the shootings where they've had not been shot, but been initiated?
I don't know.
So they don't know how they would react to
shooting. Yeah, I don't know the complete background of all the officers. No. Yes.
Initially, when we first started yesterday, we were told that Cosgrove shot 16 rounds. How was that determined?
You'll hear more about that.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. That'll be, you'll have Detective Wolf will be addressing that specific issue tomorrow.
And Haskins, whatever's name is, and his 17 shots will be addressed.
Yes. Yeah, all the ballistic stuff, the evidence collected, documented, and analyzed will be presented tomorrow by Detective Wolf. Yes?
I noticed when you said that when you went to the academy, you had training that shoot a couple times, reassess. You know, does the Louisville Police Department have some sort of training like that also?
Well, and I also added on to that interview that our training changed somewhere in the mid-90s later on. You were taught to discharge a firearm until the threat is stopped, then reassess. I was trying to get out of
his new training record, which
is back. Hold on. I was trying to get out of Detective Cosgrove, how he was trained. He just didn't want to address that or could not address that.
Yes, but they do have some.
They had that. Sometime back in the late 90s, Louisville started having their own academy. When I went to the academy, Louisville's police department still went to Richmond, where I went. Sometime in that time frame, they started training their own officers. So, but it was to the standards set out with DLCJ too. Yes? Yes, ma'am.
But you said at some point it did change to you shoot until the threat is gone, then reassess?
Yes. Until you perceive the threat is stopped, that's correct.
That's what the Army teaches. We can unload ours anytime.
Anything else?
I have one other question. This is totally off the subject. None of it done for all hearts. Remember the guy with the big SUV that was the first in line in the parking lot and went to get his kid from the upstairs apartment? When did he finally ever leave?
My understanding, he takes an Uber somewhere.
Oh, he did. Oh, so the car didn't go anywhere.
That's probably the same, so he would never have been released, so he was the same.
Oh, they, yeah, on the SUV, they showed the,
Is that what, sorry?
On the SUV of the guy who was upstairs?
Yes.
You know, when the detective was walking around and showing casings, he showed something on the side of the, I guess you step up on it to step into the car or something. Was that like a shot or was there a casing on it or something?
I don't
that would be for,
there was some.
That would be for Detective Wolf tomorrow.
Yeah, any type of ballistic stuff. But there was around that stuff they were working on, Sergeant Madden. There was the tourniquet stuff.
Okay.
There was that about that issue. I don't know exactly what you were talking about. Any fire bullets or casings, Detective Wolf will address that. Yes?
One last question on what he said. If I understand correctly, it does match up when he said he came out and he was still seeing flashes of light and they were to his left. Mm-hmm. That would have been in accordance with Hankinson being on that side in front of the window and door, right?
We can't sparse whether it was his what he likes to see in or if he's seeing be taking Hankinson's shots. We can't speak to that.
But the placement would have been up or back.
Yes. There's the crime scene video that you saw.
Yeah, that's in her bed.
That's the television in her bedroom.
I'm still curious. I thought the television in the living room was on.
No. Okay. So we are ready for the next. If we don't have anything else, we are completed with Detective Fogg's testimony, and we're ready for the next witness. We'll stop the record. We'll go off record right now.